Chair of the House Environment and Natural Resources Financing and Policy Committee, that's Representative Rick Hansen from the DFL, District 52A, who today earlier was out doing chores on his farm. What Representative, if I may ask, what was on the agenda for today's workload?
Well, Matt, I've got a lot of acres in CRP, the Conservation Reserve Program, and I had to, you can't have a lot of thistles in there. I was cutting thistles today, which is, you want to do that early in the morning when it's cool rather than the heat of the day. So I was weed whacking thistles in my CRP.
You did post a picture to me here about what you're working out there. It does look lovely. I mean, there is a part of what you're doing there, the kind of going out there and working the land. There's a romanticism to that. I have to respect that because that's a lot of work. As you described, you have to get out there early. You have to be working through the heat of the day some days. But I imagine for you, as you're out there and you work a lot, that's got to be incredibly gratifying.
Well, it's the field was buzzing, and I don't know if you've ever smelled bergamot. The whole field smells like Earl Grey tea when you're out there, and then the bees just love that stuff. And there's butterflies, and it's the diversity of flowers. It's just kind of glorious today. And when you get to the golden hour at in the late hours of the day, or the early morning, it's really stunning. So I had my nature therapy for today. So I've got to run a LCCMR meeting all day tomorrow. So I should be recharged in time for that.
Oh, we'll take away all that good feeling gone by the end of the day tomorrow. No problem, sir. I hope you don't mind us talking about, and sometimes getting down to the bare basics of a problem, but we really need to start revisiting this chronic wasting disease, which is affecting deer and elk herds, not only here, but across the upper Midwest. Bluestem Prairie had a story this morning, which was fairly shocking. It comes out of Canada, actually, where chronic wasting disease, which affects these hoofed animals, started. They are saying that now in these Canadian provinces, which of course obviously connected to Minnesota, they're getting close to, what was it, 11% of the deer that were submitted for testing in one of the provinces were coming back with CWD, chronic wasting disease. First of all, let's get into this because this is a problem that obviously there's an environmental danger here of wiping out the deer. There is a massive financial danger with the hunters because obviously you want to be careful there. And then there's also a business element because we have a lot of deer farms that have been kind of a source of a little bit of problems when it comes to trying to regulate this issue. So let's get down to this. Let's start here. How bad is chronic wasting disease in Minnesota itself?
It's kind of a mixed bag because with the last year with COVID, we didn't do as much testing as we had been doing. You know, primarily we've had outbreaks going back over the last 10 to 15 years in isolated locations, but the broader infestation has been in southeastern Minnesota over the last 5 years. At the Minnesota legislature, I think we started voting on having a moratorium on deer farms in 2017. You know, and as we've gone through this, there's always the discussion of, well, we're not as bad as Wisconsin, where they've essentially taken a laissez-faire attitude towards chronic wasting disease. So I want to add something into the topics that you suggested, and that is the ecological impact. Because if you have the loss of deer hunting, and the deer can carry the disease for some period of time, it's different for the deer, each deer, depending on that deer and its exposure and its impact. You know, you have an overabundance of deer because people aren't hunting. That wreaks havoc in the forest as well. So they can keep eating and keep shedding these prions. And I think the important thing to remember with this is it's a prion disease. It is not a bacteria. It is not a virus. It is a prion. It's a extended chain of protein. And so what we've been doing in Minnesota, I think, compared to some of the other states, is we've been investing a lot in research. We've set up a lot of money to the University of Minnesota, where they have a Center for Prion Research that is starting to reap some dividends. We've invested more in that. We have spent a lot of money, millions of dollars, on response. So when there's an outbreak and there's hunting, You draw a 15-mile circle around that, the DNR does, and you have some intensive hunting, and that's been going on in southeastern Minnesota. The challenge we've had is divided responsibility in terms of what's within the fence, the deer farms where, and the elk farms, which are regulated by the Board of Animal Health, which is a separate agency, a very small agency, and it's a board that's appointed by the governor. It's not a direct commissioner line agency like the DNR or the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And the Minnesota DNR has the authority outside of the fence. And what we've been trying to do is to transfer the deer farm authority to the DNR, the regulatory authority, where it was at the beginning of this century. In the early 2000s, the authority was transferred from the DNR to the Board of Animal Health in an effort to encourage diversification of agriculture and promote deer farming. And here we are, when you look around the state where there's a pocket of CWD, the best way I've had it described is if it was all coming from Wisconsin or Canada, you'd have like a wave of invasion, like a D-Day invasion. You know, you'd see it coming across and moving in a wave. What we see with CWD are pockets, almost like beachheads that are established, that are not contiguous, but seem to be located around these captive deer facilities. Mm-hmm. And so then you have the impact outside the fence and within the fence. And what our researchers are telling us at the University of Minnesota is that these prions can last for an indeterminate period of time. They can stay in the soil. They can be brought up by the plant. The deer can eat them and then ingest the prion, and then the disease continues. The deer poop it out, goes in the soil, process repeats itself. So, and if you have a deer that dies that has the wasting disease, that can go into the soil as well. And I think what was important about that Canadian study is, again, the additional impacts on what does it mean for human consumption. And the Centers for Disease World Health Organization, they recommend not eating CWD-infested deer, but how do you know if the deer has CWD? A deer can look healthy, it may not have that classical wasting and still carry the disease. So The work that Canada did, you know, in showing that 10%, I think there are areas of Wisconsin that are probably higher than that. And we did not have that extensive testing in 2020 because of COVID. And we need to, in Minnesota, have, you know, where these new outbreaks are appearing up in the pine trees up north in the prime deer hunting area, we've got to do a much more extensive testing and explore this human health interaction.
Well, and we also shouldn't be doing what Wisconsin does with their environment. Look what they did to their wolves over there. I'm going to read from the story a little bit. Like mad cow disease or Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease in humans, it's caused by prions, the misshapen proteins that can persist in the environment for up to a decade and transfer to healthy proteins. And it attacks the nervous system with universally fatal results on both deer, caribou, moose, and elk. Obviously, the moose population is very jeopardized in northern Minnesota. It reminds me of blastomyosis. You know, you go out into a lake's bay and it'll be called Dead Dog Bay. And they know, and my dad always told me, don't ever let your dogs go into that bay if it's called Dead Dog Bay, because that's blasto in there. The stuff that's in the ground, the dogs will get, and it, you know, takes out the dogs. It's something there. That's kind of the same premise here, correct? It's just something that lives in the ground and it's basically affecting the hoofed deer and other animals.
And high temperature burning it doesn't kill it.
Wow.
So when there is a it has to be an extremely high temperature. So just lighting the carcasses, you know, the old movies where they had hoof and mouth and they'd burn the cattle, that doesn't do it. You have to have a high temperature. So when there is a positive deer, it's actually taken to a high pH lime digester, a high pH, essentially a caustic lye digester to break down those prions, to break down that protein chain. So we had something called Adopt a Dumpster in the early years of this, where the local deer hunter chapters, or in southeastern Minnesota, the Blufflin's Whitetails chapters, they would pay for the dumpsters and the butchering stations on their own to make sure that the carcasses and the entrails and that stuff would get handled properly rather than dumped back out into the woods, and to make sure that the testing there. Now, I've hunted in the CWD area. My farm is in the CWD zone. The deer that I shoot, whether they're a buck or a doe or a fawn, I either have to drop off the head in this last year or take the lymph nodes out. So part of the training has been for deer hunters is to essentially learn the anatomy of a deer head and learn how to take the lymph nodes out and get those tested. What was being done prior to COVID is hunter would drive up, bring in the deer, and then you'd have DNR or University of Minnesota grad students and staff be there with their scalpels and take that out, take those lymph nodes out, and then get them tested. So you've got the whole range of this, of how do you dispose of that carcass if it's positive? Well, let's say you've got a deer and it right now the only test is a post-mortem test. So you have to, it's got to be dead. And so it may take a while, and particularly with an event like deer hunting where you have hundreds, if not thousands, of deer being tested in a normal year in those locations, there's a lag time on getting that analysis. Mm-hmm. So I would have to keep the carcass parts at my farm until I got the all clear that it was negative. If it was positive, I'd need to connect back with, and this affects the processors, it affects taxidermy, all of these things that are involved with deer hunting from cradle to grave, that we've had to, people are going to, for these areas that have not had CWD, that there, we have 450,000 deer hunters in the state of Minnesota. And this is a massive change in behavior on what you have to do with your deer if you are going to continue.
And I imagine there's a lot of people out there, a lot of hunters that are not following through, because, I mean, this is a process.
It's a process. And if you've always done it, and there's always people who make a choice of, well, the deer looked okay. Yeah. I've had hunters tell me, my deer look okay. I don't have to do that. I ain't got sick yet. people told me that.
Wow.
But, you know, we've just been through a pandemic, and this is a different disease. This is a creeping pandemic that goes along, that is spread in unique ways with this prion. And with Jakob-Creutzfeldt disease or mad cow disease in England, it took years for that to show itself in the human population. Mm-hmm. So why would we take the risk? Why would we risk that, in terms of things? And we have messed around with this for 5 years in the Minnesota legislature. We have tried to deal with our surrounding states with varying degrees of success. I mean, we've put collars on deer to watch how they move. If you go on the DNR website, there's a lot of data that you can see where they were positive, where they're negative. Now thousands of samples. So we know more than we did at the beginning of this, but what it takes is actual policy changes. And it is very difficult to get policy changes in a divided legislature. We put a lot of money into it, but at the end of the day, at the end of the session, what we did, instead of transferring the authority where you'd have a clear line authority, where the deer looks the same inside the fence as it does outside the fence, the agreement was to have co-management. And have you ever worked for two bosses with differing opinions?
Oh, yeah. That's delightful.
How do you think that's going to work?
Yeah, exactly. And we should get back to this. I want to touch on this. I mean, clearly there seems to be the concern is the captive deer, the farm deer. And what's interesting is, though, it's not like Republicans aren't somewhat betrothed to the hunters. And it sounds like most of the hunters are understanding the severity and the danger of this. I mean, some hunters, obviously the concern about this possibly jumping species. I think we should be concerned about that a little bit. But the reality is that it's kind of interesting to see that what seemed, and I'm not sure about the number of deer farms we have in the state, but I can't believe it matches the number of deer hunters we have in the state, but yet seeing the Republicans taking the side of the deer farms at the expense, at the regulatory expense of the deer hunter.
There's generally under 200 whitetail deer farms. We have some elk farms, we have some mixed deer, but it's generally 200 or less. There are fewer now than there were. There are a variety of sizes. We have seen, again, I'll go to the southeast and around Winona, there was a site a couple years ago where there were like six or eight deer and they were all positive. Oh. You know, there's small farms, but there's a lot of money in deer farming. If you have a buck and you have the genetics with an atypical rack, and you can sell that semen for breeding deer for captive hunting, that's a high value enterprise. You don't need a lot of deer. If you've got a genetic gold mine, you have deer that are, you know, with the lure business of capturing the deer pee and using that for lures, you know, a little bottle of doe urine costs a lot of money. People are really into their hunting. To get to your question, there are plenty of my Republican colleagues that don the orange and get that on their literature about what a great friend of the hunters they are, and mail that to the hunters in campaigning, and then they're voting with these deer farmers because they will vote under the idea of we've got to, quote, help out agriculture rather than the hunters. And again, you're talking at most a few hundred people directly involved in captive deer farming versus 450,000 Minnesotans, not to mention the out-of-state hunters that come in and that what they spend and what that means for the deer take in the woods and in the impact and in the environment. Well, so yeah. It's confusing but year after year, time after time, if you watch those debates, and I know they're somewhat excruciating to watch, the Republicans will always, always side with the deer farmers.
And if we end up, and I think we, after last year, we can understand, if all of a sudden we start having hunters that are getting sick with a version of this CWD, that it actually transfers species. I know that there's a lot of Republicans who are going to insist I was always taking it seriously when they clearly weren't. But if we get to a point where we have to stop hunting in the state, I mean, you brought this up briefly at the beginning, and just a final point here, we can point to Connecticut, the state of Connecticut, where that state is overrun with deer. And they have to do culls out there. People are constantly hitting deer with their car. You end up having, I mean, obviously, it's an environmental disaster. It's an ecological disaster. It's an economic disaster for the hunters. It's an economic disaster for everyone else. It sometimes boggles the mind that the basic stuff that would be no-brainers to deal with these issues always seems to only come after the fact that the Republicans still follow that mantra, ask for forgiveness, don't ask for permission. And this is why in an issue like this, it's critical that we actually address this the right way from the beginning.
Well, and now is a real tipping point because we're finding it up in the pine trees. You know, it's not I hunt, you know, I believe that we need hunting. It helps cull the, you know, helps manage the herd. We have a lot of deer in this state, probably more than we've had in many, many years. But when you have overpopulation, disease spreads as well, right, of the wildlife diseases because of proximity. And if you've got contact within the fence, between the fence, between the outside and the inside, that impact moves this disease. And its containment, you have to try to contain the disease. We did pass 2 years ago, you know, saying if the farm has become contaminated, you can't have cervids in there again for 5 years and you have to put up a biohazard sign. But there's rulemaking going on right now with the Board of Animal Health. They'll be meeting in the next couple of weeks and integrating the continual breaking information that comes from the University of Minnesota about retention of this stuff in the soil, transmissibility. We provided money through clean water funds for the Center for Prion Research to see if it's moving in water, because we've got a hot spot in Houston County that is not next to a deer farm, but it keeps having positive deer. And so the hypothesis is maybe it's moving through water.
Wow.
Maybe, so we're trying to check water. And think about that for Minnesota, if it's moving in water. So we are throwing everything we can at the research side, but you have to have a management side and you have to have a policy side to try to prevent the spread. Look what we just did. And maybe that scares the Republicans off with what we've done with COVID, but it seems to have worked. You have to have disease containment to try to prevent the spread. And if we know that these deer are positive, and if we know we cannot remediate that site because high temperature, we can't dump high caustic lye everywhere on these sites to purge them. So how do you manage a site? Mm-hmm. And once it gets loose in the wild population, how do you manage it there? The deer farmers and their allies will say, well, they're catching it from the outside. Well, if that was the case, we still have a problem, right? We still have a problem.
Yeah, well, Representative, first of all, I want to give you thank you very much. Obviously, clearly, you know a lot about this issue. And I think we're at the point now where if we do not address this in a much more stronger tone, I'm glad you're in charge of that House committee, because you and the leadership that's there is trying to keep this. I mean, if not for you guys, my gosh, what would be going on in the state? Thank you very much. This is something I think we're going to have to have regular updates. If you have time to come back on a regular basis to talk more about this issue as well as other things, I mean, we've had you on before with the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee in the House. I'd love to have you back, but obviously we need to keep track of this because the impacts are so far-reaching. If this gets much further out of control, I really worry about what's going to happen here, especially when it comes to hunting and the deer population, because both of those could go very bad very quick.
Yep. Be happy to come back on, and people can contact me at the Capitol. It's rep.rick.hansen with an EN at house.mn. And we have our committee website. And I would again encourage people to look at the Center for Prion Research at the University of Minnesota, Dr. Peter Larson. A lot of information there on the website, and encourage people to look and learn. I think the way we get through this is educating Minnesotans about it. And once they're educated, and aware, not even educated, but aware of what we're dealing with, then we can force action from people who have been so far denying the need to do something more.
All my best to your farm, sir. Thank you very much. I know a busy day for you. I really appreciate the time. Outstanding interview. Representative Rick Hansen, District 52A. Representative, thank you very much. We'll spotlight that interview. Let's take a break.